I'm not going to have the same intro or outro that I normally have because today is different. Today is a somber and serious post, and I don't want to trivialize it with any of my jingles or anything like that. And so today, you're just going to be listening right away to this podcast episode of The Truth Behind Good Friday. And I hope that you can hear it and have it resonate with you as a incredible truth. So today is going to be a little different than normal. Normally I would write something as a reflection or deep dive into some topic or idea. Today, however, I'm going to revert to two texts and recount them for you with very little reflection of my own. You see, today is Good Friday, and that warrants a very important look. It is a day that is remembered for the sacrifice that Jesus made to save us from the torment and death that we deserve as sinners. So with that in mind, I just want to walk you through two things. First will be the Gospel of Luke account of the Passion of the Christ. I will be starting in Luke chapter 22 and skipping here and there through to the end of chapter 23. After that, I have for years been drawn to this second piece. It is a genuine medical description of the agony and torment that Jesus endured during these final hours of his life. Some of it is graphic, but to know that even medical experts who have studied this have concluded the horrific nature of what Christ endured, it simply sheds more light on the reality of the whole journey. I think too often, those final hours get cleaned up too much, denying the genuine extent to which Jesus went to save us. We gloss over the horror of it all and tend to just focus on the salvation. And yes, salvation is a wonderful gift, and it is one that we can never and will never earn on our own. But it came at a price. So with all that said, I hope that this brings you a deeper understanding of what was given for you, about the sacrifice that was made to bring you into the kingdom. As I mentioned, the salvation that we are offered is the greatest gift this world has ever known. But it was one that carried with it the heaviest price of all time. Recognize that and be thankful for it. Luke 22, verse 39 through the end of chapter 23. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Then, after Jesus had been arrested, the men who were guarding Jesus began mocking and beating him. They blindfolded him and demanded, "Prophesy, who hit you?" And they said many other insulting things to him. Then moving to chapter 23. Pilate called together the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him." But the whole crowd shouted, "Away with this man! Release Barabbas to us!" Barabbas had been thrown into prison for an insurrection in the city and for murder. Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" For the third time he spoke to them, "Why? What crime has this man committed? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore I will have him punished and then release him." But with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that he be crucified, and their shouts prevailed. So Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, and the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there, along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you're the king of the Jews, save yourself." There was a notice written above him which read, "This is the king of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and save us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 PM, for the sun stopped shining. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely, this was a righteous man." When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things. Now, I would like to take a second to take a deeper look at what Jesus endured. Again, like I mentioned at the beginning, please forgive the somewhat graphic nature of some of this, but this is what he endured for you. So this is a physician's view of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ by Dr. C. Truman Davis. The physical passion of the Christ began in Gethsemane. Of the many aspects of initial suffering, the one of greatest physiological interest is the bloody sweat. It is interesting that St. Luke, the physician, is the only one to mention this. He says, "And being in agony, he prayed the longer, and his sweat became as drops of blood trickling down upon the ground." Though very rare, the phenomenon of hematidrosis, or bloody sweat, is well documented. Under great emotional stress of the kind our Lord suffered, tiny capillaries in the sweat glands can break, thus mixing blood with sweat. This process might well have produced marked weakness and possible shock as well. After the arrest in the middle of the night, Jesus was next brought before the Sanhedrin and Caiaphas, the high priest. It is here that the first physical trauma was inflicted. A soldier struck Jesus across the face for remaining silent when questioned by Caiaphas. The palace guards then blindfolded him and mockingly taunted him to identify them as they passed by, spat on him, and struck him in the face. In the early morning, battered and bruised, dehydrated and exhausted from a sleepless night, Jesus is taken to Pontius Pilate. You are, of course, familiar with Pilate's actions in attempting to pass responsibility to Herod. Jesus apparently suffered no physical mistreatment at the hands of Herod and was returned to Pilate. It was then, in response to the cries of the mob, that Pilate ordered Barabbas released and condemned Jesus to scourging and crucifixion. Preparations for the scourging were carried out when the prisoner was stripped of his clothing and his hands tied to a post above his head. The Roman legionnaire steps forward with a flagellum in his hand. This is a short whip consisting of several heavy leather thongs with two small balls of lead attached near the ends of each. The heavy whip is brought down with full force, again and again, across Jesus' shoulders, back, and legs. At first, the thongs cut through the skin only. Then, as the blows continue, they cut deeper into the subcutaneous tissues, producing first an oozing of blood from the capillaries and veins of the skin, and finally spurting arterial blood from vessels in the underlying muscles. The small balls of lead first produce large, deep bruises, which are broken open by subsequent blows. Finally, the skin of the back is hanging in long ribbons, and the entire area is an unrecognizable mass of torn, bleeding tissue. When it is determined by the centurion in charge that the prisoner is near death, the beating is finally stopped. The half-fainting Jesus is then untied and allowed to slump to the stone pavement, wet with his own blood. The Roman soldiers see a great joke in this provincial Jew claiming to be king. They throw a robe across his shoulders and place a stick in his hand for a scepter. Flexible branches covered with long thorns are placed into the shape of a crown, and this is pressed into his scalp. Again, there is copious bleeding, the scalp being one of the most vascular areas of the body. After mocking him and striking him across the face, the soldiers take the stick from his hand and strike him across the head, driving the thorns deeper into his scalp. Finally, they tire of their sadistic sport, and the robe is torn from his back. Already having adhered to the clots of blood and serum in the wounds, its removal causes excruciating pain, just as in the careless removal of a bandage. And almost as though he were again being whipped, the wounds once more began to bleed. The heavy cross section of the cross is tied to his shoulders, and the procession of the condemned Christ, two thieves, and the execution detail of Roman soldiers headed by a centurion begins. In spite of his efforts to walk erect, the weight of the heavy wooden beam, together with the shock produced by copious blood loss, is too much. He stumbles and falls. The rough wood of the beam gouges into the lacerated skin and muscles of his shoulders. He tries to rise, but human muscles have been pushed beyond their endurance. The centurion, anxious to get on with this crucifixion, selects a North African onlooker to carry the cross. That's Simon. Jesus follows, still bleeding and sweating the cold, clammy sweat of shock, until the 650-yard journey to Golgotha is finally completed. Jesus is offered wine mixed with myrrh, a mild analgesic mixture. He refuses to drink. The cross is placed on the ground, and Jesus is quickly thrown backward with his shoulders against the wood. The legionnaire feels for the depression at the front of the wrist. He drives a heavy square wrought iron nail through the wrist and deep into the wood. Quickly, he moves to the other side and repeats the action, being careful not to pull the arms too tightly, but to allow some flexing and movement. The sign reading, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, is nailed in place. The left foot is now depressed backwards against the right foot, and with both feet extended, toes down, a nail is driven through the arch of each, leaving the knees moderately flexed. As he slowly sags down with more weight on the nails on the wrists, excruciating pain shoots along the fingers and up to the arms to then explode in the brain. The nails in the wrists are putting pressure on the median nerves. As he pushes himself upward to avoid this stretching torment, he places his full weight on the nail through his feet. Again, there is searing agony of the pain tearing through the nerves between the metatarsal bones of the feet. At this point, as the arms fatigue, great waves of cramps sweep over the muscles, knotting them in deep, relentless, throbbing pain. With these cramps comes the inability to push himself upward. Hanging by his arms, the pectoral muscles are paralyzed, and the intercostal muscles are unable to act. Air can be drawn into the lungs, but cannot be exhaled. Jesus fights to raise himself in order to get even one short breath. Finally, carbon dioxide builds up in the lungs and in the bloodstream, and the cramps partially subside. Spasmatically, he is able to push himself upward to exhale and bring in the life-giving oxygen. It was undoubtedly during these periods that he uttered the seven short sentences recorded. First, looking down at the Roman soldiers throwing dice for his seamless garment, he says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," from Luke 23:34. The second is from Luke 23:43, when he says to the penitent thief, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And then from John 19:26-27 is the third, when he's looking down at the terrified, grief-stricken adolescent John, the beloved apostle, he says, "Behold, your mother." Then looking to his mother, Mary, he says, "Woman, behold, your son." The fourth cry we see in Matthew 27:46, which is a recitation of the 22nd Psalm, where Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Jesus experienced hours of limitless pain, cycles of twisting, joint-rending cramps, intermittent partial asphyxiation, searing pain where tissue is torn from his lacerated back as he moves up and down against the rough timber. Then another agony begins. A terrible crushing pain deep in the chest as the pericardium slowly fills with serum and begins to compress the heart. It is now almost over. The loss of tissue fluids has reached a critical level. The compressed heart is struggling to pump heavy, thick, sluggish blood into the tissue. The tortured lungs are making a frantic effort to gasp, to get small gulps of air. The markedly dehydrated tissues send their flood of stimuli to the brain. And in John 19:28, we see Jesus gasping his fifth cry, "I thirst." A sponge soaked in cheap sour wine, which is the staple drink of the Roman legionaries, is lifted to his lips, but he apparently doesn't take any of the liquid. The body of Jesus is now in extremes. He can feel the chill of death creeping through his tissues. This realization brings out his sixth words, possibly little more than a tortured whisper. John 19:30 says, "It is finished." His mission of atonement has been completed. Finally, he can allow his body to die. With one last surge of strength, he once again presses his torn feet against the nail, straightens his legs, takes a deeper breath, and utters his seventh and last cry. "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." The legs of the two thieves were then broken, but when the soldiers came to Jesus, they saw that it was unnecessary. But apparently, to make doubly sure of death, the legionnaire drove his lance through the fifth inner space between the ribs, upward, through the pericardium, and into the heart. And that's how Jesus died. The utter torment that he endured was immeasurable. Worse than anything than you or I will ever have to endure. And yet, despite having the power to stop it and to save himself from all of it, he chose to follow through with it because he knew that it was for us. So today, even though it's a dark day, take heart. Because Friday might be dark, but Sunday is coming. So don't give up.